And welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and there's more important information coming up. So keep that pencil and recycled paper handy. And as always, we start the second half of our show off with commentary. And this week's commentary is from our good old friend Oak. He sent us this commentary a couple of weeks ago. This one's called Monitor Your Monitor.
Monitor Your Monitor. One of the most frightening aspects of the internet is its tendency to remove us from the real world. Virtual reality, no matter how advanced the technology becomes, is simply not the reality nature intended. In that sense, it's not real. Arguments about humans creating their own reality, be it genetic, nanotech, or plain old-fashioned philosophizing, are all post-creation manipulation and masturbation. We did not create the Earth in all its myriad manifestations. There is not an opening for the job of creator. The position was taken eons ago. If you don't like the way the creator is running the operation, get out. When we spend hour after hour engaged in cyberspace and finally pull away, walking outside into what's left of the natural world, most of us note a certain degree of adjustment, a subtle shift in perception. Oh, yeah, the real world. The sky, the air, the ground, the sun, or the rain, perhaps insects, birds, and critters. Life is still there attending to reality as intended. Some of us are eternally thankful for that. It seems to us that the less time we spend in the real world and the more time spent in the virtual world may well be our undoing. Since the time of the pharaohs, we have exponentially increased our neglect of the real world, leading to rampant pollution, depletion of the Earth's resources and biodiversity, war and famine. During all that period, we as a species have built increasingly more complex structures, creating layer upon layer of insulation between ourselves and the planet. But for most of that time, the insulation existed within the boundaries of the real world, the physical place where, you know, where the Earth sustains us. Even as we dumped on it, tore at it, or disregarded it, it was there before us, the all-suffering, inescapable mother in our collective face. With the creation, first of movies and television, and now of cyberspace, we have not only further insulated ourselves, but have invented another reality. Perhaps we have created the parallel universe we often refer to jokingly. A place that seems to encompass most of the obvious human-perceived elements of reality without the actual reality itself. Scary stuff. Anyway, that's the view from this Oak for Earth First Radio.
And there'll be more commentary by Oak cutting up in future shows. Want to let folks know about a job that's open, a field canvas director. We are currently hiring a field canvas director. This is the Pacific Crest Biodiversity Project to recruit, hire, and train a team of field canvas organizers for a grassroots outreach campaign to protect forests in the Pacific Northwest. The duties include recruitment of canvassers through advertising and postering, interviewing of potential canvassers, training of new canvassers and leadership development, coordination of canvas logistics, assignment of canvas areas and filling out tracking forms, keeping track of canvas performances on a nightly and weekly basis, and preparing monthly reports of canvas progress. Calculate the payroll, coordinate the staff, develop new materials, and the schedule is Monday through Friday, about 40 hours a week. Qualified applicants will possess the following: a field canvas experience, strong leadership and team-building abilities, ability to balance support and accountability among staff, desire to learn to communicate, ability to be self-directed and handle many tasks at once, it's called multitasking, ability to think strategically and critically in the best use of a canvas as an organizing and fundraising tool, and they are an equal opportunity employer. You must have your application completed by April 27th, and the salary is $20,000 to $24,000 a year. Please call Alisa Moffat at the Pacific Crest Biodiversity Project to set up an interview. Her number is 206-545-3734. That's 206-545-3734. Or you can send email to Alisa, that's A-L-I-S-A, at pcbp.org. pacbiodiversity.org, and that's the Pacific Crest Biodiversity Project. Their address, 4649 Sunnyside Avenue North, number 321 in Seattle, Washington, 98103. Once again, that address is Pacific Crest Biodiversity Project, 4649 Sunnyside Avenue North, number 321, Seattle, Washington, 98103. And you might try visiting their webpage, see what they do at www.pcbp.org. And enough is enough. Let's restore Yellowstone now. Picture this, thousands of snowmobiles roaring past wildlife stressed by sub-zero temperatures and a scarcity of food. Park rangers sickened as they work engulfed in a blue haze of snowmobile exhaust. Even more disturbing is the vision of snowmobiles racing at speeds of 80 miles an hour and trespassing off-road. Does this sound like a typical winter holiday weekend in Yellowstone National Park? Unfortunately, yes. It's time to decide whether we will allow Yellowstone to become permanently dominated by a whining mass of machines, congestion, incessant noise, and pollution, or will it take necessary action to ensure that it is restored to a place where visitors can step out of the snow coaches into a quiet beauty and the pure air of America's first national park. You know the answer. Take action. Visit www.saveyellowstone.org. That's www.saveyellowstone.org. And from that webpage, you can send a letter to President Bush and Secretary of the Interior Gail Norton. And after taking that important action, you'll be just a click away from the National Park Conservation Association's Take Action Center to send a similar message to members of your own members of Congress. If you don't have web access, or for more information or assistance on this issue, please send email to takeaction@npca.org. I realize that's a web address. Or email address, takeaction@npca.org. Unfortunately, I don't have a street address for them. So, anyway, let's get the snowmobiles out of Yellowstone. It's time, don't you think? Hey, are you an Earth Firster down in Arkansas? Or you want to be an Earth Firster down in Arkansas? Or at least want to find out what Earth Firsters in Arkansas are doing? Well, there's a new Yahoo group trying to build an Earth First movement here in their natural state. Trust me, the way things are going, we won't get off our butts. There won't be much time left to refer to in Arkansas as natural. If you are in Arkansas or in a border area, come and sign on to groups.yahoo.com/group/EarthFirstArkansas. That's .yahoo.com/group/EarthFirstArkansas. And you can all start communicating down there. Remember, there's no triple W in that one. It's just groups.yahoo.com/group/EarthFirstArkansas. Tell them Uncle Dennis sent you. Looking for Casey Neal? Well, Seattle, Washington, he's going to be at the Tractor Tavern on April 19th at 8 p.m. And there's going to be some other folks playing there, too. But anyway, that's the Tractor Tavern, 8 p.m. in Seattle, Washington, on the April 9th. And the address is 5213 Ballard Avenue Northwest. On the 20th, he'll be in Portland, Oregon at St. John's Pub. That's where the hometown CD release is going to be. That's it for the Portland West Live at St. John's new CD from the Casey Neal Trio. Let's see, that address is 8203 North Ivanhoe in St. John's, that's St. John's Pub, Portland, Oregon, April 20th for the Casey Neal CD release tour. Let's see, the next day, April 21st, he'll be in Bellingham and Blaine, Washington at the Anti-Free Trade Agreement of the Americas Border events. And there'll be an evening show at Fairhaven College. You can go to www.stopftaa.org to figure out where that is. And then April 22nd in Olympia, Washington at the 4th Avenue Tavern with the Citizens Band Earth Day Bash. And that's at 210 4th Avenue in downtown Olewa, April 22nd. Don't know what time that starts, but I guess that's the you'll have to go to the 4th Avenue Tavern to figure that out. Let's get into animal news here. Urbanization reportedly imperils 188 species in California, a story by Marla Cohn of the LA Times. Residential and commercial construction is the leading threat to a vast array of animals and plants at risk of extinction in California, according to a report released by a national conservation group. While logging, farming, and water diversion often get the brunt of the blame, the National Wildlife Federation found that urban development poses a threat to more of California's endangered species. Urbanization, narrowly defined as construction of houses, offices, and retail buildings, imperils 188 of the 286 species in California protected under the U.S. Endangered Species Act, according to the One National Wildlife Federation. When people think of endangered species, they think of bald eagles, wolves, grizzly bears. But the point is that endangered species are all around us, while National Wildlife Federation President Mark Van Putten said, unless we look at how we grow, we'll have more of these problems. Conservationists intend to use the report's findings as part of their growing national anti-sprawl movement, urging cities and counties to take a closer look at how land is developed. David Smith, General Counsel for the Building Industry Association of Southern California, said the report makes sweeping judgments that are at least potentially misleading. He said California builders and developers questioned the depth and accuracy of the data, and we questioned the productivity of a report like this in resolving two critical issues, species conservation and the housing crisis. Wildlife experts say it's impossible to isolate a single cause for the decline of biological diversity. In most cases, numerous intertwined threats are responsible. But in a comparison of 18 general factors, urban development is pinpointed as one of the threats for 66% of endangered species in California, more than any other factor. Non-native species, from weeds to predators, came in second. Officials of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which enforces the Endangered Species Act, have long noted that destruction of natural habitat is the prime force behind California's endangered species listings, and specifically say the main cause is habitat fragmentation from urban sprawl. Last year, a team of scientists reported that nationally, the leading factor in species imperilment is the presence of non-native species, followed by urbanization. As animals and plants run out of room, today's developers face many more restrictions on the use of private property under the Endangered Species Act. Once a species is listed as endangered, projects that threaten its habitat must undergo a review by federal wildlife biologists. In recent years, federal control over private land has generated much controversy in Congress, but the Bush administration has not yet signaled how it will enforce the act. And the last 34 woodland caribou have been threatened by logging. An Oregon lumber company wants to log 1,577 acres in the prime habitat for 34 remaining woodland caribou in the lower United States. Stimson Lumber Company of Portland is pushing through a controversial proposal which would give the company access through the Colville National Forest in Washington State. Stimson plans to build up to 16 miles of new roads in critical woodland caribou habitat to reach the timber. There are just 34 woodland caribou left in the U.S., making them the most endangered mammals in the country. According to the final environmental impact statement issued last September by the Colville National Forest, the Stimson logging project is, quote, likely to adversely affect caribou, as well as four other threatened and endangered species, grizzly bears, bull trout, lynx, and gray wolves. The Selkirk Mountain Caribou Recovery Technical Team, made up of U.S. and Canadian scientific agencies, has stated, based on available information, it is the consensus of this team that any further losses of habitat place the recovery of these caribou at great risk. Stimson is using the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act to support the construction of roads through endangered species habitat. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's final biological opinion on the logging proposal is due out now. The Selkirk Coalition, comprised of 9 environmental groups in the Pacific Northwest, warns that this project would not only violate the Endangered Species Act, but would also set a precedent for the Alaska National Interest Conservation Act to be used as a trump the Endangered Species Act in future logging and road building projects. The Colville National Forest and final environmental impact statement on the Stimson ANILCA access easement is available by calling Connie Smith, NEPA coordinator for the Colville National Forest. Her phone number is 509-684-3711, extension 7185. That phone number again, 509-684-3711. And the extension is 7185. Remember, they're your national forests. Get a copy of that and act on it. Moving to India. Poachers have killed a tiger in a North Indian forest reserve and made off with its skin and teeth, the latest in a spate of killings of the endangered animals. Authorities stumbled upon the body last week in Kartanagat Sanctuary, an extension of the Dupuy National Park in Uttar Pradesh, where police found one tiger skin, 7 tiger skulls, and 41 kilograms, about 90 pounds of bones, over the weekend. The skin and teeth of the dead tiger had already been removed. It is definitely the work of poachers, according to Forest Minister Rajari Singh. He said he had asked the director of Dupuy to probe the killing, which came barely 3 weeks after poachers slit a tiger's throat in a southern Indian reserve and took 3 of its legs. Authorities say they were alarmed at the tiger killings in the region, which is regarded as one of the few tiger reserves left in India. Tigers were not the only target of poachers in Uttar Pradesh. Five elephants have also been killed with poison-tipped arrows in the world-famous Corbett National Park over the last 2 months. Although trafficking in wildlife products is banned in India, poaching of tigers for their skin, bone, and body parts, which are used in Chinese medicine, is common in the country. About 5 months ago, poachers killed a one-year-old endangered Royal Bengal tiger in a zoo in the southern city of Hyderabad and made off with the pelt. Conservationists estimate 200 to 300 tigers are killed each year in India, where the tiger population has fallen to about 3,500 from over 4,300 11 years ago, largely because of poaching and that ever-favorite loss of habitat. And in a further story, a special task force of the Uttar Pradesh police arrested four poachers carrying the skin and bones of tigers and other animals from the Duhwa National Park in Lakhimpur Kheri districts last week. Police seized a tiger skin and over 41 kilograms of animal bones, along with iron nets and air guns, from arrested persons who were involved in the smuggling of animal products to Western countries through Nepal. Addressing a press conference in New Delhi, State Additional Director General of Police, that's for Law and Order, R.K. Pandit, said the culprits, part of a gang of eight, were operating in the area for the last 6 years. They had killed at least 600 animals, including a large number of tigers and other rare species, and had smuggled their skin and bones out of the country, he added. The poachers arrested under the Palaya police station. Inside the national park are residents of Lakhimpur Kheri district, and it is expected that their interrogation might help locate several others involved in the racket. Senior Superintendent of Police Anand Kumar said the poachers used to sell the flesh of the animals, except that of the tiger, in nearby villages. The STF was given the charge to go into the matter following the arrest of two couriers, along with the skins of a tiger and a leopard, when they came into Lucknow, the Atara railway station, on January 25th. And salmon have returned to the Kennebec River in Maine after it was breached. The Kennebec Journal reports that newborn Atlantic salmon will be bursting out of the Kennebec River gravel this spring, and yet another sign of fisheries restoration and the aftermath of the Edwards Dam removal. The 917-foot-wide dam was removed in 1999 after blocking the passage of fish up the river for 162 years. The goal of the restoration is to restore the historic levels of fish, said Betsy Hamm of the Kennebec. This winter, Paul Christman of the Maine Atlantic Salmon Commission identified five reds in the sand and gravel over the watershed that are likely full of salmon eggs. Each red, or salmon spawning area, typically holds 7,200 sperm-fertilized eggs. Brown trout build similar reds, but Christman says he is confident these are from Atlantic salmon because of their color. Although the salmon spend the majority of their lives in the ocean, they need clean freshwater sites to lay their eggs. And hundreds of oil-infested birds have been found and destroyed in the Baltic Sea. Hundreds of oil-infested birds have been shot and destroyed in the past 2 weeks because they could not be saved off the southern coast of the Swedish island of Gotland and the Baltic Sea, the island's gamekeeper said. Some 540 seabirds, almost all of them long-tailed ducks, had to be destroyed by game wardens and the Coast Guard as they were too weak to save, Gotland gamekeeper Gert Jakobsen said. Coast Guard spokesman Anders Gowali said that there was no evidence of a major oil spill in the area where the birds were found, and no oil has come ashore, so it is not known where they were infected. Two recently destroyed birds are being examined to determine what kind of oil is involved. The search for the birds has been suspended but may be resumed shortly. And critical habitat has been designated for the celebrated jumping frog. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has issued a rule protecting 4 million acres of critical habitat for the threatened California red-legged frog. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's action came in response to a successful federal court lawsuit by several regional conservation groups. The California red-legged frog is the largest native frog in the western U.S. and could once be found throughout much of California. Mark Twain launched his literary career and secured a place in history for the red-legged frog in his short story, The Celebrated Jumping Frog of Calaveras County. Today, the California red-legged frog can be found in isolated pockets along the coast, with a few scattered survivors remaining in the Sierra Nevada. Overall, we're very pleased the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has taken this action on our behalf of our celebrated jumping frog, said Dr. Robert Stack, executive director of the Calaveras County-based Jumping Frog Research Institute, the lead plaintiff in the case. However, we're disappointed that no critical habitat was designated in Calaveras County, the county for which this frog has become synonymous. But even without critical habitat, we hope to move ahead with the reintroduction on publicly owned lands, and we've received offers from many private landowners who want to provide a home for this literary icon. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife had declined to protect the frog's habitat as required in their Federal Endangered Species Act, prompting the environmental lawsuit. In December 1999, Judge William Alsup in San Francisco ruled against the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and set a deadline for the agency to finalize the critical habitat designation. The decline of California's beloved red-legged frog mirrors the frightening disappearance of amphibians worldwide, according to Peter Galvin of the Center for Biological Diversity. Protecting the fragile habitat of these species is a critical first step in bringing these species back from the brink. And I might remind folks that just a couple of weeks ago, we found out that it was pesticides in the Central Valley that was responsible for killing most of those red-legged frogs. Anyway, moving to Australia, we have a slightly better story. A plant presumed extinct for more than 80 years has been rediscovered by a Western Australian farmer. The Cranbrook pea has been all but forgotten. It was not even listed under the Australian National Botanical Gardens extinct species list. The plant was last identified in the wild in 1918 until last week. Farmer Bill O'Halloran had been baffled by the plant since he purchased his property in the Upper Franklin Gordon River area in 1995. It grew so well he presumed it was a weed. After visiting O'Halloran's farm, Bushcare support officer Wendy Bradshaw checked reference material at home and suspected the plant was the presumed extinct Cranbrook pea. Bradshaw's suspicions were confirmed by the Albany Herbarium and the Western Australia Department of Conservation and Land Management, and then by Dr. Mike Crisp, a lecturer at the Australian National University and an associate of the Australian National Herbarium in Canberra. And the Cranbrook pea had been listed as extinct under Australia's Environmental Protection and Biodiversity Conservation Act in 1999 and had only ever been found in southwestern Western Australia. It is at least the third rare plant rediscovered through the National Heritage Trust funding since 1999, and the exciting discovery of the Cranbrook pea follows the rediscovery of the spiny daisy in southern Australia in 1999 and the hidden beard heath in Geraldton, West Australia in October of last year. That's good news. Species rescued from the brink of extinction in Australia include the mombat, the northern hairy-nosed wombat, the noisy scrub bird, the Lord Howe Island woodhen, and the orange-bellied parrot and the rose mallee. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for news on Earth First Radio this week. To get news or announcements from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email at cruzef@cruzio.com. That's cruzef@cruzio.com, C-R-U-Z-E-F at C-R-U-Z-I-O.com. Or you can send letters to Earth First Radio at P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, our zip code 95061. That address again, Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And be sure to send any and all announcements at least 3 weeks in advance so I can read them in time for your event. If you want more in-depth news and information about the Earth First movement, please subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Their address is P.O. Box 3023, Tucson, Arizona, 85702. That address again, the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 3023, Tucson, Arizona, 85702. And you can listen to Earth First Radio live on your computer every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Go to the website www.live365.com and search for Free Radio Santa Cruz. That's www.live365.com. Search for Free Radio Santa Cruz and Uncle Dennis will be there. There's lots of great radio shows on Free Radio Santa Cruz anytime, so always tune in. And you can find Earth First Radio archive shows on the World Wide Web. Currently, they're on www.lover.com, that's L-U-V-E-R, excuse me, .org, www.luver.org. Unfortunately, radioforall.net lost their server connection, so we're not on radioforall.net right now. But lover.org has agreed to make the Earth First Radio show available for download. Once again, that email address is www.luver.org, and it's right there on the left-hand side of the webpage. Earth First Radio is carried on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. Please ask your local radio station to broadcast Earth First Radio. On the web, you can find Earth First Radio on lover.com. That's L-U-V-E-R.com, www.luver.com, on Saturday nights at 10 p.m. That's Love Underground Vision Radio. And a couple of other places around the world, too. Earth First Radio is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney off of the CD Keep It Wild. My name is Uncle Dennis, and I want to thank Dr. Bob for getting my bad tooth pulled tonight so that I could get down here and do this show. So anyway, we're going to head on out of here for this week with a bit of poetry off of Uncle Dennis's Earth First CD number 2. This one written by a poet by the name of Gnome. This one's called Hey Duke Lives.
Can I do one more?
Yeah! Oh, yeah.
Okay. This one, is Wade here?
Yeah.
Wade? Yeah, as the executive director of the Sons of Haiti.
It's better than Super
Bacon. It goes, would they renounce the mainstream as half-hearted fakers demanding no compromise in defense of roadless areas over 50,000 acres, and spoke for the canyons, for the buzzards and bats, and dubbed themselves white men in cowboy hats. Well, the movement kept growing over the years. Earth First became more than them and their peers. Something went wrong in the great master plan, and they all ducked for cover when the shit hit the fan.
Hey.
Was there a fight for a movement or a fight for a name? A thousand different fingers all pointed the blame. To the hippies or leftists, the FBI or PC, to suburban redneck biologists, or a wife named Nancy. But now they've decided to face what they feared and come to embrace what they once pioneered. They'll be back to join us, asking for a new start, with goofy-ass names like Howie and Bart. But through the years, they've grown wiser. Their beards have grown bigger. Even a dope-smoking Republican who was once known as Digger, who's cried in his office since the late 80s, but now asks for forgiveness after being banished to Hades. But he's made his amends and returned what he stole, and then gives all his blessings to a movement made whole. With our present, our future, and even our past, then only then can we cuddle up closely, see Glen Canyon Dam go up with a blast. They've been hibernating, now they're awake. Have a cigar and a chicken fried steak, and give praise to the canyons, to the buzzards and bats, and to the return of the white man in cowboy hats.
Yeah.